Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Sharon Contreras. She's the new school superintendent for the city of Syracuse. Prior to taking this job on, she was the chief academic officer in the city of Providence, Rhode Island. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, a couple weeks ago, I had as a guest on this program Chris Mim from the GAO, and his job mission was to improve the overall performance of the federal government. Yours, I suppose, is to improve the overall performance of the city school district. So I'm getting people with tough jobs on this program lately. I don't want to start off on a sour note, but I do want to set the context for our listeners for the situation in the Syracuse City schools that you have entered into. So I want to throw a few facts out here to start. The school district has the lowest math and English test scores of the five largest urban areas in the state. The graduation rate is 51%, and that's also considered to be quite low. Recently, 343 staff were laid off, including 93 teachers, and over 100 additional positions were lost through early retirement or the elimination of open jobs. That's a lot. And I haven't yet mentioned the fact that the near-term fiscal future for state and local government is pretty grim. So having said all that, let me start with one of the main things that I understand you've been doing so far, which was to spend your first 100 days, and that 100 days ended just a few days ago, immersing yourself in the district, listening, learning, having audits and performance reviews done. So question is, what have you learned in the first 100 days?
Well, first of all, I think you are right. The Syracuse City School District is facing significant challenges. But I have learned that people are working really hard to do the right thing for the children in the city. And I've learned that everybody wants to do a better job on behalf of children. I've also learned that there are significant structural challenges within the system that are creating the challenges that we have. So while we have the lowest achievement of the Big Five district, I expect us to have the lowest achievement because there are certain things that don't exist in the district. For example, we don't have a core curriculum in place. So if you can't expect students to learn if they're not being taught the state standards. So that has to be put into place. And while there is a significant investment in positions, I don't believe we invest in people. And that's one of the findings that will be reported out. We have not invested in professional development for our staff. We don't really recruit well, making sure that we hire the very best people that we can. We hire late. My understanding is we hire well into the school year sometimes. So when you start looking at some of these pieces and put them together, you should expect those results. So I think it will be eye-opening the week of December 7th when we start hearing the report out of the reviews.
Yeah, and I wanted to get in a little bit later to asking you what we might anticipate there. But let me follow up on this for a second. So it sounds like you found some things, you've learned some things that left you hopeful, the commitment to the education, but there are these structural problems that you see. Was there something that you learned that really surprised you, that you hadn't expected to see going in before the 100 days started?
Not really. You know, I find that urban school districts are very similar. And I think that when I first got here, everyone said, you know, Syracuse is really different. And I always smile at that comment because what I've learned is that Syracuse does have some things that are unique with respect to culture. But I think we have to understand that urban school districts are eerily similar in that they face challenges with teacher quality, leadership quality, the demographics that they face with respect to English language learners and not having the resources they need for English language learners or high numbers of special education students. It goes on and on, but you'll find it's the same challenges.
You had anticipated one of the other things I wanted to ask you, which was what was the difference between Providence and Syracuse? So it sounds like more similarities than differences.
Absolutely.
Well, one of the expected outcomes of your first 100 days, according to the planning document that you and the school board produced regarding it going in, and here I'm quoting from the document, was a unified community committed to working together to do what is best for Syracuse's students. And I wanted to ask you, as I read that, what would you say are the sources of division in the educational community of the city that most strike you?
I wouldn't say there are divisions, but I would say there are some perceptual challenges. So, for example, I have done several dozen parent meetings, and I've done parent meetings for the same schools. And many times, the parent meetings I don't want to use the word segregated, but for some reason, the meetings are generally segregated by race. They're either primarily African-American or primarily white. And that's usually because of where they're held. They're held in a home of a parent. And when I go to the homes of white parents will generally say to me that they feel that the teachers are very committed, the schools are very responsive, and they will say they expect that the school system should be doing better, but they feel that they generally are treated well and their children are treated well in schools. That's not what I hear from African-American and Latino parents, and that has been very striking to me, the most striking difference of anything I've heard in the community.
Well, and you've tapped into something that's been in the papers recently after the last set of school board elections, but the racial composition of the school board and not reflecting the demographics of the city. Is there anything you'd want to comment about that? Is that a source of concern for parents looking at
I'm not concerned about the individuals because I've met with each of them, and I know that they are all committed to all children in the city of Syracuse. But I am generally concerned about the lack of representation of people of color on the school board because students need to see individuals that look like them in leadership positions, and parents need to feel like there are those that they can go to on the board. But I do believe that the school board members are committed to reaching out to all parents so that people of color in the community will feel like, irrespective of what race or ethnicity the board members are, they will be able to reach out to them.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Sharon Contreras, the superintendent of the Syracuse City School District. Well, you mentioned something earlier, the rolling out of the strategic plan here in early December. And this was a major piece of the early assessment that you're part of, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but let me ask you, can you give me a couple examples, specific examples, if possible, of the kinds of program changes that you're going to be suggesting there?
I'm not so certain it will focus on program changes, okay, but it will focus on bigger items like teacher quality, leadership quality, teacher evaluation, leadership evaluation, looking at how we want to focus and prioritize our resources within the district. You will hear me say often that the quality of the school district cannot exceed the quality of its teachers. I really want to invest in our teachers. I feel like they work incredibly hard, but they are not seeing the outcomes for the work or reaping the benefits of the time and effort that they put in because we have not invested in them. So I'd like to see a tremendous amount of the district's resources go into teachers. I'd also like to see a lot of, or many more resources go into supporting students and infrastructure of support for some of our highest performing students, and also making sure that we putting a early warning system for struggling students, and making sure that we intervene early and often for struggling students.
And this brings up then, of course, the big question these days, given budget realities, is we seem to be living in essentially a zero-sum game right now when it comes to public budgeting. So those two things you just mentioned, investment in teachers, and you mentioned before professional development, those kinds of things, and the support services, both sound great, but where then do you get the money to redirect those resources?
Well, I think you used the keyword to redirect resources. I'm not certain that we do not have enough resources. I think that we really have to make sure we are using all of our resources wisely. And that's part of the work of the reviews that we've had. I think that there will be some interesting findings about how we use resources. And I think that that's the work we'll do as we embark upon the strategic plan. Planning process to look at how we use resources in the district.
So I'm talking with Sharon Contreras, the new school superintendent for the city of Syracuse. Well, this follows on some of the things that you mentioned earlier, but I want to push you a little bit harder on one aspect of them. Last August, you told the school board that the accountability and evaluation systems for employees in the system were non-existent or broken. And increased teacher accountability and performance-based rewards are popular things right now, and they've been pushed by the Obama administration, among others. But they're politically risky, and there's been lots of resistance to them from the teachers. So what do you perceive the risks in pushing this to be, and how are you going to navigate those politically?
Well, I think I'm not going to push them. I'm going to make certain that teachers are involved in the process. So as we speak, we have a strategic compensation task force, and the teachers are involved in that task force, as well as the principals. And I think that you'll find many of our professionals actually believe that teaching and leadership should be incentivized and great performance should be incentivized, and that if you are yielding great results for students, that you should be rewarded for that. And I fundamentally believe in that. And I think there's a way to do that and to honor our employees who are doing a great job every day. And I think that if we include our professionals in the design of such a system, that it won't be a contentious endeavor.
So it's a question of how this gets done, not so top down, but more participatory.
Absolutely. Certainly I could push it in and say this is the new pay for performance system, but that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to design a system with our unions, and they're sitting at the table. I'm not at the table. The teachers and the administrators are at the table designing this.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Sharon Contreras, Syracuse City School Superintendent. Well, there's another development that predates your arrival, and that's the Say Yes to Education program here in the district. And I wanted to ask you about this because it comes back to, I think, the question of resource allocation as we look down the road with this, and you and I have spoken about this just a few minutes ago. But this is the program that features curricular and extracurricular interventions and initiatives that are geared toward getting children college ready. And then the other component, it guarantees their tuition at selected schools if they succeed in the program. My understanding is that the published outcomes of this program so far have been somewhat mixed, but it's early yet. First question, very basic. Do you think this program is working?
Well, I don't think Say Yes is a program. Well, I know Say Yes is not a program. Say Yes is a theory of action. It's a framework for transformation of school districts and cities and for helping children to succeed and thrive in life. And, you know, there are four elements of the theory of action. And I believe it is essential that we have a Say Yes theory of action in the city to make sure that our children are prepared for college. And I think that the elements of the Say Yes model are critical, and any school district worth its salt would have them. Extended day, making sure that there are appropriate mental and health supports and physical health supports for children, making sure there are academic supports for children, and making sure there's that tuition scholarship support for children at the end. Many, many cities are asking for the Say Yes model. Mm. So I am just thrilled to be a superintendent to benefit from this. So I think we are going to start seeing results fairly soon. As soon as the district puts a core curriculum in place and we start investing in teachers and making sure teachers have professional development, you will start seeing those other elements. You'll see the results from the investment in the other elements of the model.
Well, I wanted to ask you a follow-up to this, and it gets to this question of resources again, but looking down the road with Say Yes, my understanding is that the dedicated outside funding for the educational parts of this approach, the things that you mentioned in the first three of those tenets of the approach, those are set to run out within a couple of years. And so the question is, where will that funding come from? I presume it will have to come from the general pot of educational funding. So again, it's going to seem to me to involve some trade-offs, perhaps with more traditional instruction that's already going on. So how do you see those trade-offs being negotiated? Because up to now, I think a lot of the funding has been sort of off the school's budget, in a sense.
Well, it was always meant to run out. It was always meant to move into the district's budget because the district should be funded extended day and those academic supports for students, as is done in other high-performing school districts. High-performing school districts pay for after-school programs. They fund tutoring supports. They fund social workers and counselors for their students. So I don't see this as something extra. I see this as part of the core program for children. So I intend to build that into our core program. I think the funding is in the district for these programs. Perhaps some other things in the district are not as critical, but we're going to have to sit down and go line by line and look at that.
Okay, and just if you could, and you may not want to do this here, but can you give me a hint about what some of the things are that may end up being in that latter category of not as important and things that won't be funded?
Well, you know, we have to look at administrative cost. You know, I couldn't do that without having a budget with me. But, sure. I mean, it's always the question, you know, it's always the hard question. But I think it's going to be a difficult discussion and a difficult decision. But everybody wants everything. I think what we have to understand is we won't get everything. But we're going to have to make sure we give students as much as possible.
Well, let me finish before we get to the three questions at the end with a bottom line type of question here. And we've spoken to it in different ways, perhaps. But it seems to me that urban school districts, you mentioned earlier that they're more similar than they are different. And this follows on that urban school districts, particularly when there are high concentrations of poverty in them, like in Syracuse, they're asked to do so many things for their kids. And they can't be a one-stop shop of mental health, life counseling, economic assistance, social assistance. I mean, it just doesn't seem like that's a sustainable model for them in the long term. But unless they can do all those things, they're unlikely to succeed in educating a lot of their students. So how do we get out of that trap, you know, unless we find some pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? I mean, how do we negotiate that?
I think by focusing on teacher effectiveness. I think if we invest in teachers, you'll start seeing tremendous gains in urban education. And you will see that there is a difference in the value that certain urban districts bring or to school districts or to students, add to student achievement. There are urban school districts that are making tremendous strides with student achievement. You see this with Charlotte, Mecklenburg, for example. Houston has done a great job. Boston, Massachusetts. They're not achieving to the same level as perhaps some of their more affluent neighbors, but they're doing a great job with urban youth, and we're very proud of them. So I think there are models for urban education out there.
Well, let me move to the three questions. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
I think right now, I would say my time. It really is my time to live my passion, and that is educating children. It is deeply personal to me. I have always felt deeply passionate about educational access and equity for all children, and I am living my passion.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Impatience. I am impatient about everything, standing in line, waiting for my clothes to dry. Professionally, personally, it's terrible.
Well, this is the last question. So finally, what achievement in your creative or professional life so far has surprised you the most?
I think I'm most surprised about how many people, particularly young people, look to me as a mentor. This is particularly true because I'm the seventh of 10 children, so I've always been considered one of the youngest. So to be looked up to now as a mentor is surprising. And when I first got here, someone walked up to me and started crying, and I didn't know what to do. And they said, if you can do it, I can do it too. And it really took me aback for a moment to see somebody look up to me in that way. So that's surprising to me and humbling.
That was Sharon Contreras. Sharon, thanks much for talking with me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
Support comes from the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University, dedicated to the study and practice of citizenship, leadership, and public governance. Information at maxwell.syr.edu.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender and Kelly Coleman, with recording engineer Tom Fazio. Learn more about the Campbell Conversations by visiting our website, wrvo.fm.